you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics, or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted, and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
That's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems. The biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need. How prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com. How to Pray for a Financial Miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com.
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. And now your host, the author of more than 20 books and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another live episode. Good to be with you every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern. And tonight we've got a great program lined up for you. My guest in just a few minutes will be the author of Noah, The Real Story, and his name is Larry Stone. You're probably familiar with Larry Stone. He is the author of, Life's Little Instruction Book. Everybody's seen that. This is the guy. And his book is on Noah. And we saw the movie last night, my wife and I. And I'm going to be talking about that here in just a couple of minutes, my movie review. there is no cliffhanger. I hated it, okay? So if that's the only reason you tuned in, you can go do something else now. But I'm going to get into that in just a minute. Had an interesting week this week. If you own a boat that you keep in the water, you know what I'm going to tell you here. About every 2 to 3 years, you have to have the boat pulled up and set up on blocks, and they have to put new bottom paint on it. People don't know this if you're not a sailor, you're not a boater. You don't know about what bottom paint is and all that's involved, but if you just put a boat in the water and let it set there, barnacles will attach, and before you know it, it'll start actually eating right through the hull of your boat. So what you do is you put this bottom paint on there, and it has copper in it and some other chemicals that actually what's happening is it's slowly dissolving into the water, and that kills all of the sea life that would want to attach to it. So that's how it works. And if you have a boat, you probably know that it isn't even the cost of the boat that is the issue. It's the maintenance, the ongoing upkeep. And so this week, it was the time we had to do it. We had to take our small sailboat. We don't have a big yacht. We do have a small sailboat. We did have to sail it up to St. Augustine, which is the next major port from Palm Coast, where they have big, you know, marine boatyards. And we did that a week and a half ago. We took it up there. Then they took the boat from us and set it up and painted it and all that. And then we had to get it back home to our home marina. Now, you know, by boat, it's only about 25 miles between Palm Coast and St. Augustine. But by sailboat, you know, we can get about 7 miles an hour, you know, 8 miles an hour, depending on the winds. So it takes us about 3 or 4 hours. So my daughter Faith and I, we brought the boat back on Friday. And it was actually a really nice day. It was a beautiful day. And if you are over on my Facebook page, either the ChristianMoney.com page or my personal page, you'll see a picture of me on the boat. So we did that on Friday. And then I got a tremendous burst of, you know, good news. Not only Last week was I able to, the week before this, so Sunday starting a new week, so it would be not this week but the prior week, I was a guest on Coast to Coast AM, which is a radio show that comes on in the middle of the night, but it's on over 600 radio stations, and I was a guest on there a week ago Wednesday. And I got a phone call on Monday of this past week, and they're working out the details for me to be on George Norrie's television show. And how it's going to work, tentatively, I'm supposed to fly to Denver, which the studios are actually in Boulder, Colorado, but it's like in the next, it's 2 weeks, I believe, from this last Friday is when I'll be flying to Denver. It's going to be Easter weekend, but they are in production, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to take my opportunity, and I'm going to be on George Norrie's television show. You can find out more about that by going to beyondbelief.com. It does require a subscription to be able to get the television show. It's like $10 a month, but they have some deal where you can get the first 10 days free. And you might want to join to be able to see me, maybe not. I'll let you decide. It's beyondbelief.com. But it's really good news for us, for ChristianMoney.com, to apparently now have fostered such a good relationship with the people at Coast to Coast AM, which, by the way, is a secular radio show, and it gives us a great platform to be able to share our Christian beliefs and views about money. And it's just a neat opportunity to reach that large of a secular audience. I did have to do the show from 2 to 4 a.m., which, you know, you think about it, I had no idea how I was going to do. You know, you're on the radio in the middle of the night, 2 to 4 a.m. So I took a nap, and I got up and made a huge pot of coffee. And apparently I did well, because they want me to come on their TV show now. So I'm very thankful for that, thanking the folks over at Coast to Coast AM for that opportunity, and looking forward to reaching a whole new audience with their television program. Let's take a look at what's going on my Twitter feed. Twitter.com/James L. Paris. And by the way, before we do that, if you didn't hear me say it last week, I'm going to say it again. This radio show, we're going back to terrestrial radio. So you've been hearing us over the internet for the last year and 3 months. But most of you know that I have a long history of being on traditional radio over the airwaves. And we're going back. We're going to be on the Genesis Communication Network. We don't have a firm date yet on the startup, but it will probably be in 30 days or less. And when we have a firm date, of course, it'll be posted on the Twitter feed. So this will give us just access to a much, much larger audience, and we're very, very excited about the opportunity. The show will also expand to 2 hours, so we'll be going from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern every Sunday night, with live calls and great guests and all kinds of neat stuff. So we're working on the details of that, and we'll have that to you shortly. So back to the Twitter feed. A weird story today. I don't know if you saw this. I don't have any details on it, but it is so weird that I had to post it to my Twitter feed. This is out of Henry County, Georgia. A fifth grader says he was terrified when a police officer pointed a gun at him and his friends while they built a tree fort. This is weird, and if it's true, I'm horrified. I did this when I was a kid. You probably did this too. Apparently, there's a wooded area behind this kid's house. He's 11 years old, and he and his friends decided they were going to put up a tree house. Probably they were trespassing. It's probably someone's land, or it's somehow controlled area, you know, forestry area. Who knows? But he wasn't supposed to be there. But who hasn't done this as a kid? You kind of find like an empty lot where maybe somebody owns the lot and there's a house that's not built, or it's just sort of an empty area that hasn't been developed yet. And you go in there and you get a bunch of scrap wood and you put up a little fort or a little treehouse. Well, apparently a neighbor was disturbed by all of the noise they were making putting up their treehouse. These kids, 11 years old. And so the police come up with guns drawn on these 11-year-old kids. Now, I wasn't there. I don't know the whole backstory. But I'm hearing more and more stories like this about the police just really overreacting to very innocent situations. But here's probably the most disturbing part of this. This is from the so the parents upset about this. They call the police department, the Henry County Police Department in Georgia, and so they report this. They say, "Hey, our 11-year-old was building a fort in the woods, and the police came in and drew a weapon on him. I guess forced the kids down to lay on the ground while the weapon was pointed at them." And so here's the response from Sergeant Joey Smith. He says, "If it was justified, then we'll deal with it. If it wasn't, we'll address it as well." So this is his comment about these 11-year-old kids having a weapon drawn on them. And for those that are regular listeners to the show, I'm not like a soft-on-crime guy. You know, if these were 16-year-old kids, maybe I would be looking at this differently. Maybe I'd be thinking, well, who knows, maybe it was a gang. I mean, at the age of 16, kids can be big. I mean, kids can be six foot two at the age of 16, 17. These were 11-year-old little boys building a fort in the woods. So that's on the Twitter feed. Take a look at that. What else? The Noah movie. I'm going to talk about that here in a second. Lots of stuff on about Bitcoin, no surprise. Here's a story. The Chicago Sun-Times, the first U.S. newspaper to accept Bitcoins. So if you're buying a subscription or, I guess, advertising, they're now accepting Bitcoins. What else here? Bitcoin ATMs continuing to roll out across the country. And, in fact, apparently a congressman is going to be getting a demonstration of how a Bitcoin ATM works. We've got a link to that. We also did a live video workshop last week talking all about sort of the latest on digital currency, a new digital currency called WorldCoin. And I do have a link to that video, which is now up on YouTube, over on my Twitter feed, twitter.com/James L. Paris. Okay, the Noah movie. Where do I begin? I was talking to some of my friends today at church, and I said if I had to describe the Noah movie in a sentence, it would be The Love Boat meets The Shining. Do you remember The Shining, where Jack Nicholson, he's with his family at this resort, and they're like locked in this resort for the winter? He's like a caretaker. It's been a long time since I saw the movie. But I do remember that he kind of goes insane in the middle of the movie and like starts attacking his family. Well, this is what happens in the unbiblical version of Noah, this movie out. Noah goes crazy in the middle of the movie. So if you can imagine this, they build the ark and the flood comes. So at that point, we're pretty much okay with the biblical version there, except for these giant talking rock figures that are supposedly part of the plan that, to protect Noah's ark from the rest of the world that's trying to get on it. So where these big rock figures come from, nobody knows. The Watchers were not rock figures, but that's what this person did with their creative license. So that's fine. Those are pretty cool looking. But here's where it gets weird. In the middle of this, so the flood comes, Noah's on the ark with his family, and he becomes like a Jack Nicholson character and goes insane and is hunting down his newly born grandchildren on the ark to kill them. Because the storyline is that Noah is not on the ark to save himself and his family to repopulate the earth. That's not why he's on the ark. He's on the ark apparently to save himself from the flood, but it's his understanding, the movie version here, that his family is supposed to be the last family. So there's not supposed to be any more children born. So Noah in the movie, Russell Crowe as Noah, his understanding is that he's to go to all this trouble to build this ark because God's going to flood the earth, and then his family's going to survive the flood with all the animals, but that his family will be the last family. So what happens is his son gets his wife pregnant on the ark, and they end up, and this is all just made up out of whole cloth. So now we've got two babies, twins, twin girls are born. Noah says, if the baby that's born, he doesn't know they're going to be twins. He says, if the baby is a boy, I will let it live. If the baby is a girl, it must die. And it turns out it's not just one girl, but it's twin girls. So Noah then spends, this is a pretty large chunk of the movie where Noah is hunting down his daughter-in-law and grandchildren to kill them on the ark. I mean, I'm serious. That's why I said to my friends today at Sunday school, we were talking about it, I said, it's like the Love Boat meets The Shining, and Russell Crowe becomes Jack Nicholson hunting down the two newly born grandchildren because they're women, and it's his understanding that now, because they're women, they could bear children, and now, you know, the existence of man can go on. And that's not God's plan, according to the Noah, the version of the movie that we're supposed to watch. So here's kind of the weird question. Why would you make a movie and call it Noah and go completely off in a whole different direction than the biblical version? It's just confusing to me. I mean, if you had made it along the biblical story, not only would you have drawn in all the Christians, which now the word is out, you know, in the Christian communities, there aren't going to be any like First Baptist buses pulling up to the to the movie complex after this first couple of weekends. That's not happening, okay? I went to see it out of curiosity because I've already heard that it was not going to be the biblical version, but I thought I should go see it, so I did. If you made a movie and you called it Noah, why wouldn't you at least somehow loosely stick to the Noah story? I don't know. But it was bizarre, and as much as I had prepared myself going into the movie, knowing that it wasn't going to be the biblical version, because I'd already heard all of this, I'd already heard, you know, everybody talking about it, it's not the biblical version, read a bunch of blog posts about it, but even with all that said, even going in expecting it not to be the biblical version, I was still in shock at how far off it was. So my wife and I, we said, we've got to go back and read the Noah story. We were so confused after the movie. We said, we've got to go back and read the Noah story. Now, she did today. She read the Noah story, and the way to church, she was telling me, you know, look, here's where it was wrong, and here's where, I mean, we found that it was so inaccurate that there was little about it that was accurate. There was so little about it that was accurate. I mean, outside of there being an ark and a flood, I think pretty much everything else was wrong, as far as we can tell. So we're going to get the story straight tonight. We're going to talk to our guest, Larry Stone, and his book is called Noah, The Real Story. And it's his first time with us. You're probably familiar with him as also the author of Life's Little Instruction Book. And Larry Stone, welcome. A first time with us on Jim Paris Live. Good to have you, sir.
Jim, it's wonderful to be here. And you did a great job summarizing the movie.
Did you like my thought that it was The Love Boat meets The Shining?
Yes, I hadn't heard that, but you're pretty accurate, actually.
Well, let me ask you, my wife was asking me to ask you this, and it's a great question. Is this just a coincidence that I have your book in my hand and the movie is out, or did you know this movie was coming and this caused you to schedule the release of a book you were already planning to write? Share with us the backstory of how this all came together, timing-wise.
Okay. No, actually, I knew about a year and a half ago that the movie was going to come out, and I figured that whatever the movie was going to be like, it was going to get people talking about Noah and the ark and the flood and the animals. And the story has always fascinated me, partially because there's so many, if you want, rabbit trails about them. You can study the animals, you can study the flood, and the importance of the flood in understanding how our earth was created. And then, of course, there's a whole story about the search for Noah's Ark, which isn't even addressed in the movie, and there's no reason why it should be. And so what I tried to do in the book is just saying, okay, people, you're going to want to know what the real story is. I'm going to tell you. And it's a short book, but it gives in brief overview all the different aspects of the Noah story. And so, of course, we planned it so that it would come out right about the time of the movie.
And you'll have to forgive me, I have not read your book cover to cover, although I have read some of it and I've scanned most of it. So if any of my questions sound uninformed in terms of, hey, you should have read the book, I will be reading the book this week. But let me start with this question. Is it not true that almost every tradition and religion in the world has a Noah-type story, which tends to give credibility to this whole concept, whether you are a Bible-believing Christian or not, that an event like this must have happened because it's just recorded in too many different holy books around the world?
You're absolutely right. There's over 300 flood stories around the world. And in the book, I tell about a half dozen of them, from the Middle East to Europe to India to North America to Africa. And there's a remarkable similarity in these two. So, for instance, many of them have a rainbow. Many of them have a worldwide flood and one family that is being saved by a boat, along with the animals. The animals are in most of the stories. So yes, absolutely. And it could be, people sometimes say, if they don't believe in the Noah story, that there's floods all over the world, and so people just tell stories about floods. And other people say, well, they copy one another. But in my opinion, this is a collective memory of one great worldwide flood.
Now, one of the interesting things, I don't know if you've heard this or you address this in your book, but some of the sort of ancient alien crowd where they believe that there was a time in the past when we were far more advanced as a culture, and now we are where we're at today, and we're just discovering computers, we think, for the first time. But their thinking is, hey, we were way, way technologically advanced beyond this back in our early days. This is kind of a weird theory, but there are some that suggest that it wasn't really an ark as we understand it from the Bible, that it was sort of like a spaceship of some sort that collected DNA samples, and that's how this was done. Do you address any of that? Because, in fact, as strange as that sounds, as I've been researching this topic, there are a lot of people that seem to believe in that sort of like UFO version of the story of Noah.
I don't address a UFO version at all, because I think there's enough to say just about the idea of a real ark, a real boat, a real flood, and saving real animals.
And some people would wonder, as I would, Larry, from an engineering standpoint, and I'm sure you get into this in the book, is it possible, or would it have been possible at that time, for a man to have built something of the size necessary to actually bring in two of every animal, or is it just that they brought in two of each type? Like maybe instead of every single species of snakes, was it like that two snakes were saved and then those snakes kind of created the species we have today? What's your view on the head count inside the ark of animals?
Well, you've actually addressed two questions there, and I can pick either one. I'm going to take the one you asked last. But number one is the construction of the ark. And I'll just say real briefly, the Bible gives it in cubits, which is usually considered to be a foot and a half, and translating it, the ark was 450 feet long by 75 feet wide by 45 feet high with three decks. And that's about all we know about it from the Bible. But the question is, how many animals were on the ark? And I think that's the second question you were asking there. And the key to that is, in the Bible, God tells Noah to take onto the ark two animals, all the unclean animals anyway, male and female, after their kind. And so what does that after their kind mean? If it's every species, well, we know there's between 3 million and 30 million species right now, and so you'd have to have millions and millions of animals. But it's exactly the issue you raised. Did Noah have to take onto the ark two dachshunds and two beagles and two schnauzers and two wolves, or just two of an animal that represents the dog/wolf family? And those that have really studied this say that if after their kind means a genus or a family, Noah probably took as many as 16,000 animals on the ark. Now, that's still a lot, but it doesn't have to be millions and millions. And the answer to the other question is, yes, they could have fit on a boat that was 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high, along with the water, along with the food, along with what was needed.
Now, in the Russell Crowe Noah version, the animals are put to sleep with this magic smoke so that they're sort of in a hibernation state during the time that the boat is afloat. We don't have anything to make that reference biblically, but I don't think that is necessarily unreasonable that maybe God decided to put the animals in a hibernation state during the cruise, the time that they're out on the water. Is that something you address in your book, or what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that's a great answer. Now, you can't say in the Bible that the Bible says they went into hibernation, but it would solve a lot of logistic problems with how to care for the animals during that year-long voyage. And the book addresses how that could have been taken care of if they were awake, but if they hibernated, it would make things a lot easier, no question. There's one other thing in the movie that I'm intrigued with, was how they answer the question. People ask, and legitimately, how did Noah collect all the animals to get them on the ark? And the answer in the Bible is actually he didn't. The Bible says God brought the animals to Noah. And in the movie, as you remember, all the birds come. Noah didn't go out and get them. He stands there almost amazed as all these birds come flying into the ark. It's really cool. Then later on, all the snakes come onto the ark. And then later on, all the elephants and the horses and the camels and all the other kinds of animals come onto the ark. And Noah didn't go out and get them. It's actually pretty accurate to the Bible there. God brought them.
Yeah, that was a really amazing. I don't know how they did that, probably with some sort of computer simulation to make it look like all those animals were coming onto the ark on their own. That was very interesting.
Exactly.
I remember, Larry, growing up back in the 1970s, and maybe my timing is wrong on this, maybe it was the early 80s, was there not a movie where I remember going actually to the movies with my parents and seeing a movie that was something about In Search of Noah's Ark, and they were actually on an expedition, and there was a time I remember around when that movie was coming out that there was a lot of excitement and buzz that maybe the actual ark had been discovered on Mount Ararat. What are your thoughts on the ark actually being found, or has it ever been a location ever really been targeted?
There's many fascinating stories about the search for the Ark on Ararat, and that you're absolutely right. In the 1970s, there was a movie. I think the name was In Search of Noah's Ark, and it caused quite a stir. In fact, I'll tell you an interesting story that it caused such a stir that CBS wanted to broadcast a version of it. Now, when it first came out, there was a man in California that thought the whole thing was a little absurd. And so he wrote a letter to the people that produced the movie and said, I have been over there, and I have found the evidence of Noah's Ark. Well, the letter sat in their files until CBS came along and said, we want you to do another movie. So then they contacted this man named George Jamal and said, we would like you to come on the show on CBS. And so he thought, oh, my goodness. So he went out to the Long Beach Railroad Yard and got a piece of wood. He cooked it in teriyaki sauce and salt and all kinds of other stuff and went on CBS before 40 million people and said, here is a piece of the ark that my associate and I found on Ararat. Then, when they wanted him to do another version of the movie, he said, I can't do this anymore. And he confessed that the whole thing was a hoax. So, unfortunately, there not everything, but there have been some hoaxes, like this example of people that have said, I've found the Ark, and it's just purely, it's either over enthusiasm or, as in this case, a pure hoax. But there have been many stories. Jim Irwin, who was formerly an astronaut, he took several trips over to Ararat to try to find the Ark. I have a story in the book of a man who was, as a young boy, an Armenian boy, living in the area of Ararat, was, he said, taken to up the mountain by his father and shown the Ark. Then later on, when he was an older man living in California, he got with an artist and painted a picture, this artist did, of what that Ark looked like. And we have that picture in the book. And I'll tell you one other story.
I'm fascinated. Yeah, continue with that, and then I've got a follow-up for you. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll tell you one other story that I think in some ways illustrates some of the not problems, but challenges with finding the Ark. In the 1950s, there was a geologist named George Green. He was actually, he worked primarily in oil exploration. And he was doing some exploration in northern Iran and got a helicopter, because he had access to it, and flew to Ararat. And the story is that he saw the Ark. And so the helicopter got down close, and he took some very clear pictures of the Ark and carefully noted where the Ark was. Then he came back to the United States, and amidst all his normal work, he tried to raise money to go back to Turkey to find the Ark. And he showed people these pictures he had taken. Well, during his travels, he left these pictures with a friend of his, and then he came back and got them and went to British Guiana to work in a gold mine, helping out finding the gold in British Guiana. We don't know where those pictures were, because the last we know of George Green was when he was found face down in the swimming pool of his hotel in British Guiana. The officials went into his room and didn't find any evidence of things being taken, except for the contents of his briefcase, which were totally empty. And although there are 30 to 40 people who say, I saw those pictures, nobody today knows where they are. And somehow, in the search for the Ark, that's not uncharacteristic. The bit of evidence, the official report, the photographs, people say they saw them, but not today. And so people are still looking for the Ark on Ararat.
Now, some people say that the discovery of Noah's Ark could be the greatest discovery, archaeological discovery, in the history of the world, and not just from the standpoint of archaeology, but the greatest spiritual discovery in the sense that, and some have said that God is waiting for the right time for this to happen, because some Christians have said, can you imagine what this would then do to the world if you could actually, if Noah's Ark was found, what that would mean in terms of people believing the biblical account from not just the story of Noah, but you'd have to say, wow, if that's true, probably the rest of this book is true. So there might be those with an agenda that don't want the Ark to be discovered. But Larry, what are your thoughts about the significance of finding Noah's Ark? I certainly can't imagine anything else being any bigger of a story in my lifetime if they found Noah's Ark.
You're absolutely right. In fact, quite apart from the spiritual aspect, Melville Grosvenor, who was the first editor of National Geographic, said exactly what you said. It would be the most significant archaeological discovery ever. But the Armenians who live right around Mount Ararat, they have the tradition that you're talking about, that at the end of the age, God will reveal the Ark as a sign to the unbelieving world. So it's not something people just recently have made up. This is what the Armenians feel, and they feel as if they are protective of the Ark, which they feel is on Ararat. But they think that God is going to reveal it to an unbelieving world, and it would be absolutely huge.
Wow, very, very interesting. We're going to go ahead and put you on hold, Larry. This is a four-minute break, so you can stretch your legs, get a fresh cup of coffee. Our guest tonight, fascinating, Larry Stone, Noah, the real story. And now it's your chance to ask your questions. Do you have a question about the Noah story? Maybe you saw the movie. You want to share your thoughts on that. Your opportunity to talk to our guest, Larry Stone, 888-287-3316. Toll free, 888-287-3316. Or you can send your question over by email, jim@christianmoney.com. jim@christianmoney.com. But remember, I do take callers before the email questions. Again, the call-in number, 888-287-3316. If you're listening between 9 and 10 o'clock Eastern on a Sunday night, we are live, and you can call in right now with your questions, 888-287-3316. We'll be back after this short commercial break. Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. Recently, I did an event in Chicago unveiling a brand new service called Christian Money Plus. It's been years in the making, and I'm super excited to let you know that it is now available. At the centerpiece of this new program is the ability for you to have unlimited access to me personally using the internet. You'll also receive my 12-page newsletter mailed to your home each and every month. Now, there are tons of other benefits, such as our suite of financial calculators, model portfolios, and much, much more. Right now, I'm offering several bonuses to our new subscribers. Some of these bonuses include a video on how to use the internet to raise money for your idea or project. This is money you will never have to pay back. There's also a second video on how to save money by dropping cable TV, and I also cover on this video how to get free home phone service for life. Yes, you can drop cable TV and still get hundreds of channels on your television set legally using the internet. All of that, including how to get the free home phone service for life, all of that on your second bonus video. Additional bonus reports include how to opt out of Obamacare, as I did, and save thousands by joining what's called Christian Medical Sharing. Another bonus report shows you step-by-step how to stop Google from spying on you. All of this information is available right now to subscribers of our brand new service, Christian Money Plus. I sure hope you'll consider joining us. All of the money that comes in every month from Christian Money Plus goes to further the mission of our website, ChristianMoney.com. Check it out today. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. Again, that's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. You can subscribe right now and access all of these bonus reports within a matter of just a few seconds. Check it out right now. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to pray for a financial miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems, the biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need, how prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues, how to pray for a financial miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com, how to pray for a financial miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. You know, about a year ago, I started getting concerned about the cost of our family's health insurance, literally costing us thousands and thousands of dollars each year, and the cost continued to go up and up and up. And I started doing some research into an alternative called Christian Medical Sharing. And I learned that through a special law, a special provision, Christians are able to opt out of Obamacare and actually get into this alternative to traditional health insurance called Christian Medical Sharing. I decided to go ahead and move into a plan like that, and I'm saving a lot of money. Now, if you'd like to find out more about it, get more of the details to find out if it's for you or not, I've written an article on it. In the article, I give you more details, including I actually mention the organization that I decided to go with. If you'd like to get all of the information on this and find out if it might be for you, check out this website, medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. That's medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. Okay, we are back. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. My name is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website christianmoney.com. And our guest tonight, fascinating book. It's Larry Stone, and it's the real story behind Noah. I know there's the movie out, but this book is the real story. Noah, the real story. And let me look here. This is published by WND, and I know WND Books, and you can get this everywhere. I saw it on Amazon. It's trending. It's a very popular book right now. You can get it through the WND website as well. And Larry, I'm going to bring you back here, turn your mic up. And
okay.
What's the best way for people to get this book? Is it to go to the WND website, or would it be to go to a place like Amazon to buy it?
Well, you can do either. Through WND.com, they have actually autographed copies. So it's just a little bit special there. But I would recommend, first of all, you go to WND.com and get the book. Or if you can't do that for some reason, Amazon has it as well.
Yeah,
I'd also like to mention, by the way. I'm sorry?
I said I love your cover design, by the way.
Oh yeah, it's great. And I'd also like to mention there's a website for the book called www.noahtherealstory.com. And one of the things I'm telling people is that if you're going to go see the movie, just as you did, Jim, talk about it afterwards. And on the website, there's a discussion guide with about 24 questions to get you going in your discussions about Noah.
Now, Larry, before we go to our callers here, is there any, I mean, obviously you're a guy that's, I mean, I would love to have you do my marketing. You knew the movie was coming out a year and a half in advance, and you wrote the book. I guess I should be asking you, what's coming out in a year and a half from now that maybe I can write a book on? But are there any legitimate Noah movies coming out that you know of in the near future? I mean, it seems like people are very interested in this subject. Is there a sort of Bible-approved version of the Noah story coming out to the big screen as far as you know?
Not as far as I know. Now, there is one coming out, I believe, on Moses and the Exodus coming out this fall. But again, I don't know anything about how accurate that's going to be because it's not being done by Christians.
And they probably have, like, Johnny Depp cast as Moses or something, you know. Who knows?
That's right.
Who knows what's going to happen? All right, let's go to the phone lines now. And we have Joanne, one of our regular callers and listeners up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Joanne, welcome to the program tonight. Say hello to Larry Stone, author of Noah, the Real Story.
Good evening, Joanne.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a kind of a question, kind of a weird question, but first of all, how long ago approximately was this, and how did they get the Earth repopulated with that, the issue of incest and all that? How could they have repopulated the Earth?
Oh, so questions here, Larry. One is, how long ago was the flood? Do we know, I guess by the biblical genealogy, maybe we know. And then her question is, what a lot of people ask is, now wait a minute, how could one family repopulate the earth? That would have brothers and sisters having sexual relations, and we're told that you can't do that because it would be medically, you would have children with all kinds of birth defects. So what about those two questions?
Well, the answer to the first question, it was, I believe, about 5,000 to 6,000 years ago, 4,000 to 5,000 years ago, that the flood was. The answer to the second question is that on the ark, there was Noah and his wife. Then they had their three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and they had individual wives. So those individual wives weren't directly related to Ham, Shem, and Japheth. So cousins, in a sense, marrying. And I think that you had the same problem, if you will, back with Adam and Eve, where you had just two people and then their offspring. But I think that at those points, God intervenes and keeps some of the diversity necessary in human beings.
It is interesting how we could accept the whole idea of the flood and the ark and all of this, but then we get stuck on something like, how could they procreate if they were related, as if God somehow reaches his limit of ability there. But here's an email question coming in from Washington State. Somebody wants to know, were there dinosaurs on the ark? And they go in here further. I'm not going to read the whole question, but this whole issue of, like, the dinosaurs and when did they roam the earth and all of this. Some people say it was even before creation that there were dinosaurs, and then God sort of started all over again, and then we had the creation after the dinosaurs. So were there dinosaurs on the ark? That's a great question. Could you have even fit a dinosaur on the ark?
Well, I address that specifically in the book, and the answer is, if the dinosaurs and Noah were there at the same time, yes, there were dinosaurs on the ark. Conventional geologists today say that dinosaurs died out about 65 million years ago, and that mankind didn't show up, of course, until much, much later. And so a conventional geologist would say, no, they couldn't have been on the ark. However, creation geologists who believe in a young Earth, that the Earth is only about 6,000 years old, say that, yes, dinosaurs and mankind were on the Earth at the same time. In Petersburg, Kentucky, there's a creation museum, and if you go there, they will show humans and dinosaurs at the same time. Then the question comes, okay, if there were dinosaurs on the Ark, how would you get them on the Ark? Well, the Brontosaurus and the Tyrannosaurus Rex get most of the good press for dinosaurs because they were huge. I mean, like 50 tons and 100-ton animals. But if dinosaurs were on the ark, the first thing I was going to say is most dinosaurs were much smaller. There are many, many dinosaurs, and not all of them were as big as Brontosauruses. But if they were on the ark, what God wanted them was to reproduce. And you don't have old dinosaurs, or for that matter, old elephants, on the ark for reproduction. You want young ones. And unlike humans, or most mammals, when they get to be a certain age, they just stop growing. Dinosaurs kept growing until they died. And so when you have a small, even a Brontosaurus on the ark, it wasn't 100 tons. It may have just been a couple tons, which is not small, but still much more doable.
Now, this is fascinating. In Chapter 9 of your book, you talk about something called Noah's Ark Park and Resort. And
yes.
Tell us about this. I had no idea that this even existed, that you can actually go see. Is this an actual full-size replica of the Ark? Tell us about this.
It's a full-size replica of the Ark. There's a Chapter 9 that you referred to. I mentioned where you can go see the Ark. And right now, there's not a full-size Ark in the United States, although they're breaking ground for one next month. But the two primary ones in the world are the Noah's Ark in Hong Kong, and this is a developer that was developing this island in the Hong Kong harbor, and as part of the deal, he wanted to make an amusement park, or an educational park, I should really say. And so what they did was they made a Noah's Ark park and had a full-size ark there, 450 feet long, but it's partially hotel, partially a creation museum. Another one is in Holland. Now, the one in Hong Kong is stationary. It's not meant to float. In Holland, though, about 15 years ago, a man built a half-size ark, And what's so interesting about that was he built that with his sons and built it in just a couple of years, much like Noah might have done. But after sailing the around Holland and the rivers and the canals in Holland for several years, he sold that. And just about a year and a half ago, opened a full-size ark, all 450 feet long, that floats. And you can go see that. And then the one that's being built in the United States, and they're breaking ground next month, is about an hour south of the Cincinnati Airport in Kentucky.
Wow. So that's going to be like in the movie Vacation, where he says to the kids, hey, we're only 5 short hours from the world's largest ball of twine. That's going to be on that map, right? Like, hey, we're only 6 hours from the replica of Noah's Ark. So it'll be one of those stops in like an out-of-the-way place that you probably not maybe go to unless you were doing a family driving vacation. But what a wonderful – what city in Kentucky is that going to be in?
Well, it's a great it's near Cincinnati. I think it's Williamstown, Kentucky, and it's being built by the same people that made the Creation Museum in Petersburg, Kentucky.
Wow.
And they do a first-class job, and this is going to be part of a whole – I won't say amusement park, but again, an educational park called Ark Encounter in Williamstown, Kentucky. They're breaking ground next month in May, and I'm not sure I know how long it's going to take them to build, but it's going to, they think the cubit was a little bit longer than a foot and a half. This ark is going to be 510 feet long, and it's being built by Amish builders. And they got the plans all done, they got the grounds ready, and they're ready to go.
Wow, that's exciting. Have you been to any of the ones either in Holland or Hong Kong?
No, I haven't. I would really love to go and see them. Although I've been
well, I mean, as the guy that wrote the book, I mean, man, a little digital, you know, video camera and a trip over there, and you've got some great YouTube footage. I would think WND, if they're listening, send Larry to see one of the full-size arcs with a camera crew. That would be very, very cool.
I think what my wife is worried about is I'm going to get all excited about going to Ararat to try to find the real arc. And that can get dangerous.
Yeah, I understand. That's a very, very dangerous area where that is. Hey, as we close it out tonight, give us a little bit of an overview of you personally. I didn't want to shortchange you with my introduction, but you have a number of other books out, including Life's Little Instruction Book. So, and you're also a graduate of Moody Bible Institute, and I'm Moody's financial guy on their morning drive show in Chicago.
Terrific.
And I've been working with Moody for 20 years doing financial reporting for them and so forth. So we're good friends with Moody Bible Institute. But Larry, tell us a little bit about you and if you have a personal website and any other books that people might want to check out.
Well, I got two websites because I had two of the books that I did were the Noah the Real Story, and the website there is NoahTheRealStory.com, and that will give you a lot of the information that is in the book also. Not as complete, but it'll begin just give you an introduction. Then about 3.5 years ago, I published a book on the history of the Bible, and that's called The Story of the Bible, and the website there is www.storyofbible.com. And that has a lot of information about the history of the Bible. You can see ancient manuscripts of the Bible and read a lot of the stories of the people that translated the Bible and helped to preserve it for us to read. I'm by profession, I'm a book publisher. I published, as you said, Life's Little Instruction Book that was immensely popular about 15, 20 years ago, and still it's just an absolutely fascinating book. I have 10 grandchildren, and my wife and I have another 11 children that call us Grandma and Grandpa Stone. So I enjoy tremendously being a grandparent.
Very good. Larry Stone, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll definitely have you back. The book, Noah, The Real Story, our guest Larry Stone. We'll take a quick one-minute break here, and I'll be back with some closing thoughts about Bitcoin and the current price level. Everybody's saying, well, Jim Paris, are you ready to cash in all your Bitcoin now and give up on this whole idea? I'll tell you what I think about it right after this.
A reporter is plunged into the dark world of money laundering and the worldwide crime network when he stumbles across a scam so big that his life is on the line. Now the true story can finally be told. An investigation that will take you across the globe to England, Eastern Europe, Australia, Panama, Africa, and New Zealand. How an international network of money launderers got away with more than $100 million stolen from the Christian community. Exposing the Ponzi Masters is the true account of one man determined to expose the truth and the legions that tried to stop him. A story so dark that you won't believe what you are reading. A story so important, it's being monitored by government agencies worldwide. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, a true crime expose from James L. Paris, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, available on Kindle from Amazon.com.
Okay, we are back. This is Jim Paris, and we've just got a couple of minutes left, and what a great interview. I'm fascinated by people who take something out of the Bible and make it real for us today. Because isn't it so easy for us to, even as Christians, we believe the Bible, we have faith in God, we believe it's true. In one sense, we believe it's true, right? But then don't we fall into the same trap as everybody else? We start thinking of it kind of as a story, and we maybe like a bedtime story that we share with our kids. And don't we have our own doubts? Like, was there really a guy named Moses that parted the Red Sea? Was there really a guy named Noah that built this big giant ark and put the animals in it? You wonder. And then you hear a fascinating interview like that, and you say, wow, my faith is refreshed, and this is just great, great information. And I'm very excited to see a renewed interest in the Noah story. And we didn't get into this with our guests, but maybe when we have our friend L.A. Marzulli back here in the next few weeks, we'll ask him about what was going on the earth before the flood, and why did God flood the earth? That's interesting. It's very interesting to look into that. There was a lot of bizarre things going on, including some characters called the Nephilim. And we talk about the Nephilim a lot with our friend L.A. Marzulli. All right, quick closing comments here on the world of digital currency and Bitcoin. So if I put in my web browser right now, bitstamp.net, that's sort of the best place these days to go to get a good current value on Bitcoin. The current price on Bitcoin, $454. It's been as high as like, what, $1,200, $1,300. So there are a lot of people saying, again, Bitcoin is dead. The price of Bitcoin, now below $500. Look, let me tell you my perspective on this. Number one, I am thoroughly convinced that digital currency is here to stay. I think just like the internet has changed so many other industries and so many other parts of our lives, I think the internet is in the process of changing money. I think that digital currency is here to stay. Whether Bitcoin is going to be around forever and ever, or whether it will be some descendant of Bitcoin that sort of picks up the ball and runs with it, I don't know that. But here's what I do know, that on a lark, back in the fall of 2012, I put $20 into Bitcoin. Okay, 20 bucks. And even today, my $20 is still worth almost 700 bucks. So to me, that's something pretty amazing to look at. And for those that are saying, well, look, it's over, it's now below $500. I mean, it was only a handful of years ago that Bitcoin was trading for like pennies. And so this is why, you know, we're not following the ups and the downs of the digital currency world and saying, oh, digital currency is up this week, so now we're interested in it. Oh, it's down this week, now we're no longer interested. That's not our approach to this. We really do have a long-term perspective and a long-term interest in digital currency. There's a lot of reasons behind that, but we are spending a lot of time writing about digital currency, commenting on it on our members-only podcasts and our members-only newsletter, and you can check that all out over at ChristianMoneyPlus.com. Right now, we're real hot on a digital currency called Ripple XRP. It's a digital currency backed by Google, and many people think it could very well be the next Bitcoin. And in fact, right now, we're giving this digital currency away to new subscribers to our newsletter over at ChristianMoneyPlus.com. So if you're interested in learning more about digital currency and you'd like to get started with some free digital currency, we will actually give you free Ripple XRP digital currency. Check it out over at ChristianMoneyPlus.com. We have specials from time to time, but our standing offer is 150 Ripple XRP if you grab just a one-year subscription to Christian Money Plus. And again, you can grab that by going over to ChristianMoneyPlus.com, ChristianMoneyPlus.com. All right, we're going to be on terrestrial radio soon, so stay tuned for updates on that. Genesis Communications Network, we'll be going with them in the next 30 days or so. We'll have a firm date for you probably this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Grab this book, Noah, The Real Story, a fantastic read. This is Jim Paris here, as always, to help you make the most of God's money. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Jim Paris Live. For more information about our program, visit ChristianMoney.com or send an email to jim@ChristianMoney.com. Join us next week for another live program.